Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Giving you a behind the scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan here. Nick Kieser alongside me. Hello, Nick.
What's up?
How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's rainy. It's pouring. I wish I was snoring.
Well, we're not going to put anybody to sleep with this show.
Hopefully not.
We are going to have an entertaining show. The Nashville Predators are off, of course, for the next 2 weeks. The Four Nations Face-Off Tournament starts tonight, and we will get into that later in the program. The Nashville Predators won their final game before this two-week break on Saturday, defeating the Buffalo Sabres 6-4. Ryan O'Reilly and Jonathan Marchessault, 4 points each. O'Reilly, 4 assists. Jonathan Marchessault, 1 goal and 3 assists. Brady Shea with 2 goals. Philip Forsberg with 2 goals. An entertaining game, to say the least, but the Predators enter this break on a high note. Of course, the playoff picture for the Predators is bleak. They are 18 points behind the Vancouver Canucks for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference, which is to say the Nashville Predators will not make the playoffs this season. And Nick, I was listening to Andrew Burnett's news conference after the game. Willie Donick actually tipped me off to this. He said you asked a really good question. Pat yourself on the back, my friend.
Thank you, Willie Donick.
He said you asked a really good question of Andrew Burnett. So before we play the clip, share the question you asked, then we'll play Andrew Burnett's answer.
Yeah, well, I know that we'll hear it, but in the back of my mind at the end of the game, and given that they're off for as much time as they are, Adam, it's worth wondering how he assesses himself and how he assesses this team. And so that's a fair question, I think, given the regard of how much in-depth we've talked about the quality of chances and shots and everything that they've generated. So I think it's well worth noting that he's going to look inward, and we'll definitely hear his thought here in just a second. But, you know, it's interesting to go around the locker room, too. And so I got some players' thoughts on that the last few weeks. And to hear Bruno kind of talk about this was very interesting to me. And, you know, last year I had him pause for reflection a few different times and always got something interesting out of him just because he's a guy that looks inward a lot of the time, Adam. And so it's good for a coach to do that, but it's about the quality of which he does that and how much it matters long term. So I thought it was well worth understanding his perspective and how aligned he is with this team currently, honestly.
Let's play the clip.
Bruno, you've talked about how you've wanted to improve this team over the course of your tenure so far. How much of the break are you going to be focused on adjustments or for yourself coaching, maybe changing a few things moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think take a couple days off without letting me say that, but no, there's lots there, and you know, I wish I had some of the answers for this group, and you know, I really still don't after 50 some, and kind of reassess where I'm at and where our group's at and how can I help them. And there's a few things in mind that, you know, tweak wise, and we got, you know, 4 days of practice, which will be nice, and see if we can come up with a few things. And liked a lot of the things we've done offensively, and I know the results aren't there, but the you know, the expected goals and the zone one shots and all the things that I believe are important are there. So I'm going to go back and look, and maybe I'm not, you know, maybe they're not that important, but I believe they are. But well, I think I'll dig into that a little bit, and there's some things defensively I'd like to dig into. So it's hard sometimes during the course where we're at right now to make big adjustments, but I think there's some tweaks that we could do.
That was Andrew Burnett. So now that we've heard his answer to your question, Nick, what are some of the some of the things that you think Brunette is going to be thinking long and hard about over the next couple of weeks?
You know, I think the first place he has to start is with breakouts, honestly. This is a team that prided itself on doing that effectively last season, and they had the personnel to do so. And so, I mean, a lot of film will be utilized for this. And, I mean, defensively speaking, you know, you want guys like Nick Blankenberg and Brady Shea and Roman Josi to be those guys that can do that. Those are just three names that come to mind immediately that, you know, hey, I've seen them do it consistently at some point. So how does Justin Barron, you know, fit into that mold now? And hey, I guess Andreas England comes into that, which I'm sure we'll dive a little bit into at some point, maybe not, but Preds once again add another D-man off of waivers. And so, I mean, that's place number one I would stop on this avenue. I think the next place as well has to be getting back to the interior. Andrew Brunette has harped on that. We've not heard him talk about it very much lately, Adam, but I believe that will be the next place that they firmly go to, because if they can get to the interior and they start having goals fall their way, A, that's going to help boost their confidence, but B, I think they're going to start buying more into what Bruno is preaching in the locker room time and time again. And so, and I've even seen at practices how the players have demanded excellence, but in the games, for some reason, even Steven Stamkos will look and be like, why in the world am I hitting the post as often as I am? And so the results are very weird, but I think with a few adjustments, with a few soul-searching days for Andrew Brunette, and I think one of these is his day off, probably still, but I think after they do some searching inward, they could perhaps turn a corner. And for the better, I think that is going to be tough to do out of the gates against Colorado, but, you know, it is what it is, and they have to move on.
When you look at this season as a whole, the Predators have been, inarguably, the most disappointing team in the National Hockey League.
Absolutely.
I don't think there is any other team that can compare to how disappointing the Predators have been compared to preseason expectations. And because of that, a lot of Predators fans are pointing the finger squarely at Brunette. And we know, especially in the NHL, coaches have short leashes. They have short tenures. I think there are a couple of things that can be true. One, this Predators team, on paper, is the most talented team they have ever had, specifically when it comes to offensive talent. Remember, the Predators were the first team in NHL history to acquire two players coming off 40-goal seasons in the same offseason. There is no doubt that, again, on paper, this is the most talented team this Predators franchise has ever had. The shooting percentage that this team had early in the season, really through the first half of the season, I would say, rivaled some of the worst single-season performances since shooting percentage was tracked. You have to go back to, I believe the NHL starts tracking 5-on-5 shooting percentage in 2009, I want to say. Halfway through this season, the Predators were near the bottom of the list in terms of single-season 5-on-5 shooting percentage. So there is a lot of luck, or lack of luck, involved in the Predators' struggles this season. At the same time, all of the players are having bad seasons. This is not isolated to one or two players. Across the board, the top players on this team specifically are having less than stellar seasons. Even someone like Philip Forsberg, who is nearly a point per game player this season, 53 points in 54 games. I think we would all agree that Philip Forsberg has not been Philip Forsberg this season. Gus Nyquist, I expected regression from Gus Nyquist. He had 75 points last season in his mid-30s. I did not expect him to have only 20 points 50-plus games into the season. He has, I believe, 5 non-empty net goals. He has 9 goals total, 4 are empty netters, if I'm not mistaken. So he has scored on a goalie 5 times this season.
And also went 30 games without scoring on a goalie. So,
no matter how you slice it, the underperformance has been across the board. To me, that falls on coaching. So there is, I do think that Brunette gets a little leeway just because, again, I do think that the fact that this team couldn't score a goal to save its life in the first half of the season, first third of the season, I do think that some of that is just bad luck. But at the same time, when I look at the totality of the season and the underperformance of basically the entire roster, I can't ignore Ange Brunette's place in that, which if Brunette continues on as Predators head coach past this season, I think, to your point, Nick, he needs to take a good, hard look at himself and how he coaches the game. On the midday show last week, Derek, Willie, and I were talking about this, and Derek made a great point. Derek said, if I'm a coach and you're asking me to change the way that I coach in a significant way, why do you want me to be your coach at all? I don't want to compromise what got me to this point. So if you want me to change something, you might as well fire me. And I actually thought that was an interesting point. But I do think that Brunette really needs to look at his personnel and determine if there are certain things that he needs to do to put them in the best position to succeed. And I think these last 28 games of the season should be used as an experiment. I think that Brunette should use the final month and a half of the season, whatever it is, to experiment with things that maybe he wouldn't when this team was in a playoff race.
And I think that that's completely fair, to be honest with you. And, you know, I just mentioned earlier how they go get a random guy on defense that no one in Nashville has ever heard about. And maybe
Andreas England, I believe.
Andreas England,
yeah. A defenseman from the Kings.
Yep, played in 11 games so far, has just one goal. Played all 82 games last year, by the way, and averaged 10 hits a game. But that's, you know, apropos to what this actually is meaning. But I think it's interesting that they could call up some younger players, Adam. And I know that we'll talk more about that, I'm sure, at some, you know, extent. But, you know, Luke Evangelista will be back. Zach LaRue will probably be back by then. And I'm interested to see how Svechkov fits into this as the season moves along. But, you know, just those three alone make me think, how much of an elevated role will they be gifted at times, perhaps? And, you know, Joakim Kimmel obviously was called up and played just two games, and wonder if they'll end up bringing him back, possibly. I'm not sure, but I would like to see the elevated roles given to them and let them mess up, like let them learn through things and just figure out what the NHL level was like. And, you know, Luke Evangelista had a good first year. And I mean, for him, he's been able to look back on what it was, and his sophomore slump has been real this year. So I want to see them be put in spots where they need to learn from themselves, honestly, Adam. And so that'll be where, you know, Andrew Brunette has to buy into a new system a little bit. I mean, he's got to have a different style. And if he doesn't adjust, then, I mean, you know, his job is definitely on the line here. So we'll see how he changes things moving forward here and if it actually works or not.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, I took the bait, guys. I really didn't want to, but I took the bait. I'll explain next. Adam Bingen with Nick Kieser. This is Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Bingen and Nick Kieser here with you. The Predators are off for the next basically 2 weeks. They are back in action Saturday, February 22nd. Against the Colorado Avalanche to start a four-game homestand against the Avalanche, Devils, Panthers, and Jets. Not an easy way to get back into the swing after 2 weeks off. But the reason why the Predators have 2 weeks off is because of the Four Nations Face-Off Tournament, which starts tonight. We will talk about that later in the program. But Nick, I got sucked in, man. I took the bait. And I know he does this because people will take the bait. And I shouldn't do it, but I did it.
Yeah, but if you didn't take the bait, he wouldn't be doing his job.
Our very good friend and colleague, Jared Stillman, following the Predators' win against the Buffalo Sabres on Saturday, tweeted this, quote, Justus Onninen has 12 wins this year. UC Saros has 11. Keep in mind that, of course, Justus Onninen started the season with the Colorado Avalanche. They had their goaltending issues, which is why they traded for Scott Wedgwood. They traded for Mackenzie Blackwood. But I took the bait. And I texted with Jared. And Jared as you all know, when he digs in, it is nearly impossible to get him to change his mind. And I'm not arguing with him that UC Soros has struggled this season, because he has. But I'm trying to provide context for certain things. So one thing I asked him is, do you think that wins are a quarterback stat? Which he said yes. So he thinks wins are a goalie stat. I would disagree with that. I think that's too simplistic. But I took the bait, and I decided to look back at Soros and Onanen's numbers since Onanen made his Predators debut in early December. Since then, Soros has played 19 games. He's made 19 starts. Onanen has played 11 games because Soros has been pulled twice, but he's made 9 starts. Onanen has 7 wins. Soros has 5. So, again, if you're just looking at wins, Onanen has won more games. If you're looking at some of his traditional numbers, Onanen has a 2.93 goals against average and 9.04 save percentage with the Predators. In that same span, Soros has a 3.32 goals against average and an 8.84 save percentage. Again, looking at those traditional numbers, wins, goals against average, and save percentage, clearly Onanen has been better over the past couple of months. But then I started to dig a little deeper. And Onanen's numbers are still better than Soros' numbers when you get into the fancy stuff. Goals saved above expected per 60 minutes. Onanen has saved 0.59 goals above expected per 60 minutes. Soros has allowed negative 0.04 goals saved above expected. So basically average. My way of saying, when you look at negative 0.04, Nick, that says to me that Soros has basically made the saves he's supposed to make and let in the goals that he's supposed to let in. He hasn't gone above and beyond.
Sure, that's fair.
Expected goals against per 60 minutes. So this is a reflection of the defensive play in front of these goaltenders. Soros 3.24, Onanen 3.47, which means that Onanen has actually faced worse defensive coverage than Soros when in the net, based on the quality of shots that the Predators have given up when they're in the net. Scoring chances against Onanen 25.3, Soros 24.1. Slot shots on net 15.7 for Onanen, 14.9 for Soros. All of this is to say that the defense has not played well in front of both of these goalies. Onanen, however, has been better at making saves that maybe he shouldn't make than Soros, since Onanen made his Predators debut in early December. But Nick, here is the number one number that I want everybody and Jared to hear. Goal support per game. The amount of goals the Predators score when these goalies are on the ice since December 5th. Onanen, 4.15. Soros, 2.25. The Predators have scored nearly 2 more goals per game with Onanen in net than with Soros in net. To me, that is the most damning number of all. That Onanen has been better than Soros. I don't think that you can argue that, since Onanen has been a member of the Nashville Predators. But Onanen has a lot more wiggle room to struggle based on the number of goals that the Predators have scored when he's in the net versus Soros. Again, 2.25 for Soros, which means he has absolutely no margin for error. So I understand those of you who say, well, if Soros is going to be an elite goalie or paid for 8 years, he needs to make saves that other goalies shouldn't make, and he should steal some games. I largely agree with that, that Soros needs to be the Soros we've seen in the past. You know, one of Jared's arguments has been, if Soros is so good when this team was struggling, how come he didn't steal games single-handedly to prevent this season from spiraling? To an extent, I understand what he's getting at. But my point generally is, especially over the past couple of months since Onanen arrived in Nashville, Soros has received little to no goal support. There is literally no margin for error for UC Soros in net. So he can stand on his head, but his team isn't scoring goals to give him that cushion.
Yeah, exactly.
So those are my numbers. Mm-hmm. What do you make of it?
No, I think it's fair. And I know that last stat that you shared, that'd be harder for me to go grab. So thank you for sharing that. The other ones definitely are easier for me to find. But I think that's intriguing for sure. And I know that you and I off the air have talked a lot about the goaltending at times as well back in the office. But look, I think it is interesting that Saros has not played to the level that is expected of him for sure. And fans have all the reason to be upset with the season at large. I think they have less of a reason to be upset with UC Saros. And the defense has a lot to do with that. Brady Shea himself he said to me probably 2 weeks ago, he goes, yeah, I'm still adjusting to this system, which is insane to me. And he is someone that has played for the Rangers and the Hurricanes, and I get it. They play a much different style, but at this point in the season and the new contract that he signed, that should be more in question than UC Saros' contract currently, if you ask me. But in general, I think looking at the goal support is very, very intriguing as to how they play so differently in front of Eustis. Look, my first thought while you were talking about all of that for the last few minutes was maybe it's just because of how much of a different style these two goalies play. And they don't look too different in the net, honestly. But what I will say is a larger framed goalie does not have to move as much as UC Saros does. And I think that does have a little bit to do with it, quite frankly, because when you are a D-man, you are going to allow a bigger goalie more time and space to make saves. I see too often times, Adam, where Luke Shin's trying to go down for block shots or whoever it is when Saros is in the net. I mean, Nick Blankenberg has played goalie at times, covering that post almost in a VTech formation. I mean, come on. Like, that has been evident at times, and he has saved games that way. He just had one the other night against Buffalo. So I think that's interesting to kind of just find out that there are two more goals of a difference from Eustis Onanen's coverage support as opposed to UC Saros. And I'm interested to see how that, you know, plays a factor moving forward and if Eustis Onanen gets more starts because of that, maybe.
So I'm looking back at single seasons since 2020-2021, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the first year that UC Saros was the full-time goalie for the Nashville Predators. So I'm looking at all goalies who have started at least 30 games in a single season since 2020-2021. So there have been 169 instances of a goalie starting at least 30 games since the 2020-2021 season. UC Saros this season ranks 165th out of 169. In terms of overall goal support per game, the Predators have scored 2.21 goals per game this season when UC Saros is in net, again, which ranks out of 169 goalies who have started at least 30 games in a season since 2020, 165 out of 169. I'll tell you the other goalies behind him. There aren't that many. Kaapo Kähkönen, last season with the Sharks and the Devils, received 2.13 goals per game in terms of support. Mackenzie Blackwood, last season with the Sharks, 2.02. Peter Mrazek, last season with the Chicago Blackhawks, 2. And John Gibson, with the Anaheim Ducks in 2020, 1.95. So UC Saros, since becoming a starter, this is the worst goal support that he's ever had to work with. So, again, I want to stress this. Saros has not been good this season. He has not stepped up to the plate as he has in prior seasons. He is not going to be close to a Vezina Trophy finalist this season. And by the way, that award is voted on by GMs, so don't get mad at reporters. Reporters don't vote on the Vezina Trophy. UC Saros is not going to be anywhere near the Vezina Trophy finalist cutoff this season as he's been in previous seasons. So I do not disagree with any of you who think that UC Saros has been bad this season. I just think it's important to keep the proper context that UC Saros, especially early in the season, he did everything he could to keep this season from completely falling off of a cliff. It mostly fell off of a cliff, but he kept it from falling completely off of the cliff. But he wasn't getting any goal support, and that has carried over. I mean, and that really has carried over through much of the season. So context is key, is all I'm saying. Yes, UC Saros has been bad this season, but it's important to look at some of the numbers, and I think the most important number to look at is the fact that he's received no goal support and therefore has to be on top of his game from start to finish because he has been given no margin for error. If the Predators were scoring 3.5 goals per game in his starts, he'd be a lot better off. But unfortunately, that has not been the case.
Yeah, so we'll have to see if that actually pays dividends. And look, I mean, like I just talked about, I think the defense plays differently with both goalies in the net. And I don't know if that's a product of knowing the goalie more and maybe saying, hey, you can do these things differently. And that'd be an interesting little piece to look more into when they're back in action. And just, I mean, look, it's very weird that that is the case. And it's still just mystifying, Adam, that they can't find the goals to support that as well. So maybe they can, you know, like I have talked about ad nauseum, maybe they can adjust something. But I think defensively, that structure has to change. But I also think the trust level has to, you know, be there as well. I don't know if it's different with one or the other in the net. I don't think that's too much the case because, like you said, UC Saros was playing well at the start of the season. So for me, at least, we know it exists. We know it's there, and the Predators know that it's there as well. So it's questionable, but at the same point in time, is he going to be able to, you know, recapture who he was last season even toward the end? Because I thought he played pretty damn well last year too. So, but it's good to see that there is a blossoming goalie. However, it's not encouraging when your starter's not playing well either.
Coming up next, it's time for some international best-on-best hockey. We'll talk Four Nations face-off. Coming up next, Adam Vingan in with Nick Kieser tonight. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan, Nick Kieser here with you on a Wednesday evening. There is hockey tonight. It's time for the Four Nations face-off tournament. Canada takes on Sweden tonight at 7 o'clock Central. You can watch that game on True TV, TNT, Max, Turner Sports, basically. It's a four-game tournament. It's a round-robin tournament. Four nations, of course, it's in the name. Canada, the United States, Sweden, and Finland. Each of those countries will play each other. The top two teams in terms of points at the end of the three games will face each other in the championship game, which is next Thursday, February 20th in Boston. So here's the early schedule. Tonight, Canada versus Sweden in Montreal. Thursday, the U.S. and Finland in Montreal. And a doubleheader on Saturday, Finland versus Sweden, the U.S. versus Canada. All of those games, again, at Bell Center in Montreal. On Monday, February 17th, in Boston, Canada versus Finland, Sweden versus the United States, and the championship game Thursday, February 20th at TD Garden in Boston. And Nick, on Monday, these teams started practicing for the first time, and as I was seeing the tweets roll in with the line combinations, man, the amount of talent that these teams possess. It's the first time we're going to see NHL players in a best-on-best situation in nearly 10 years.
Wow, it's junior in high school.
Thank you for reminding me. The 2016 World Cup of Hockey. Listen to these lines for Team Canada. We'll, of course, talk about the United States since we are American after all.
I sure hope so.
Line one, left to right, Sam Reinhart, Connor McDavid, Mitch Marner. Line two, Mark Stone, Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon. Line three, Brad Marchand, Braden Point, Seth Jarvis. Line four, Brandon Hagel, Anthony Cirelli, and Sam Bennett. On defense, Devin Taves and Cale Makar. Josh Morrissey and Colton Parayko. Shea Theodore and Drew Doughty. Their goaltending is suspect, Aiden Hill, Jordan Binnington, and Sam Montembeau. Let's look at the team from our nation, the United States, left to right. Line one, Kyle Connor, Jack Eichel, Matthew Tkachuk. Jake Guentzel, Austin Matthews, Jack Hughes. Matt Boldy, JT Miller, Brady Tkachuk. Brock Nelson, Vincent Trocheck, and Dylan Larkin. On defense, Jacob Slavin and Adam Fox, Zach Werenski and Charlie McAvoy, Noah Hanifin and Brock Faber, and in net, Connor Hellebuck. I cannot wait for Saturday night U.S. and Canada in Montreal. It's going to be must-see TV. But there are three Predators representatives in this tournament, Nick. Two on Team Sweden, one on Team Finland. So let's talk about Team Sweden first.
Yeah.
Philip Forsberg and Gus Nyquist are part of Team Sweden. Here are their lines, projected lines. Mm-hmm. Philip Forsberg on line one on the left wing, centered by Elias Pettersson of the Vancouver Canucks and Adrian Kempe on the right of the Los Angeles Kings. Second line, Rickard Rakell, Mika Zibanejad, and William Nylander. Third line, Jesper Bratt, Joel Eriksson-Ek, Lucas Raymond, Victor Arvidsson, Elias Lindholm, and Gus Nyquist on the fourth line. So Nyquist playing with former Predators forward Victor Arvidsson on the fourth line. On defense, Victor Hedman and Jonas Brodin, Rasmus Dahlin and Rasmus Andersson, Matthias Ekholm with Erik Karlsson, which should be fun. And I believe Filip Gustafsson is expected to be in net for the Swedes. Jacob Markstrom was supposed to be the starter from the Devils, but he suffered an injury. So Filip Gustafsson of the Wild is expected to be the starting goalie for Team Sweden. So when you look at Team Sweden, Filip Forsberg on the top line with Elias Pettersson and Adrian Kempe, Gus Nyquist on the fourth line with Victor Arvidsson and Elias Lindholm. What do you make of those lines specifically?
Yeah.
Starting with the top line, Philip Forsberg, Elias Pettersson, and Adrian Kempe.
Future national predator at center, maybe? I don't know.
Probably not.
Probably not, though. But that can be put to bed for sure, especially after JT Miller was moved. But no, that's going to be really fun to watch. I know that Elias Pettersson has really good, you know, parts of his game down the middle of the ice. He demands the puck pretty well and honestly does a good job of possessing it as well. And Kempe and Forsberg are great, great guys to have on the wing because they're great at finishing their shots. So that'll be fun to watch. I'm very intrigued to see if Gus Nyquist gets rotated in and out of the lineup a little bit too. I know that initially we had talked about this too on the program that Gus Nyquist was listed as the seventh forward. Looks like Leo Carlson is around there as well. So we'll see if that ends up changing a little bit. But I'm interested to see how Gus does with Lindholm. And look, I think that Lindholm does a pretty good job down the middle as well. Not like Pettersson. Pettersson's a little bit more dynamic than he is, but still both are great at dishing pucks and passes. And Victor Arvidsson, you know, the RV. You know, I remember Justin Bradford's little RV that would, you know, drift by. And I think he does a good job of getting around guys. And he's a little shifty player. So we'll see how he does with Gus Nyquist. And, can Lindholm kind of drive that line and you know lead those breakouts? Because Nyquist can do that, but I don't know if he can do it at a consistent basis where they can drive that line. Maybe we'll see that happen. I'm not 100% sure, but and also I'm very, you know, fond of Ekholm as well. So we'll see how he does with Carlson back there. And you know, Carlson obviously brings some offense, but I think immediately just out of the gates there with both Predators, I'm excited to see how they do on offense, Adam, and if we see Gus Nyquist play with some more confidence, because we know Forsberg has it, but is Nyquist going to play with more of that pizzazz that we saw last year?
Moving on to Team Finland, I would say probably the weakest team in the field from left to right. Teuvo Teravainen, Alexander Barkov, and Patrick Laine. Arturi Lehkonen, Sebastian Aho, and Mikko Rantanen. Mikael Granlund, Roope Hintz, and Kaapo Kakko. Etu Listerainen, Anton Lundell, and Joel Armia. On defense, Esa Lundell and Olli Maatta. Juuso Valamaki and Henri Jokiharju. Niko Mikkola and Urho Vaakanainen. I hope I pronounced all of those correctly. The defense for Finland is a bit iffy, and UC Saros is among the goalies who could start for Team Finland. Kevin Lankinen also on Team Finland. Now, one thing that's going to be important here, Nick, is when it comes to goalies, I think that the coaches of these teams are probably going to go with the goalie who's been playing the best in the NHL. You know, you ride the hot hand, right? We were just talking about UC Saros. I can only imagine how the anti-Saros crew is going to react if Kevin Lankinen starts ahead of UC Saros when Finland kicks off its tournament schedule against the United States. I'm hoping that Saros will start to spare me having to deal with all of that, but I think it's an open question who might start a net for Finland.
I don't know if it really is, to be honest with you. I mean, I think I would like to see Kevin Lankinen out of the gates, to be frank with you. I think the more time Saros gets to himself to kind of relax would be better for him. But, you know, I think there is that pride as well. And I think UC Saros would be a formidable starter playing for his country. Things would look a lot different. And I think that Predators fans that are going to be tuning in are going to be spoiled by the play in front of him after our last, you know, endearing segment about goal support. So I don't know if he's going to get any better goal support. You would obviously assume so, given how many all-star caliber players there are. So, but I mean, look, Kevin Lankinen's been phenomenal this year. He's been Vancouver's starter, hands down. Thatcher Demko once again got hurt last week too. So he's only playing in a more elevated role. And I think he is by far the better goalie stat-wise this year. But I think talent-wise, Saros still has him beat Adam. So goaltending-wise, that is one part. They may be a weaker team compared to most, but it's going to be interesting to see how they end up using that tandem. They also have Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen as
right,
well.
From the Sabres. So he is the third goalie for Team Vinland. To me, the team with the worst goaltending is probably the best team in the tournament, and that is Canada. They made a mistake by not having Logan Thompson on the team. He's having a fabulous season for the Capitals. Aiden Hill, Jordan Binnington, Sam Montembeault. Aiden Hill won the Stanley Cup with the Vegas Golden Knights a couple of years ago, was outstanding in that tournament. I can make the argument statistically that Aiden Hill is the worst goaltender in this tournament. And I think I would go with Jordan Binnington. I actually think a statistical case could be made for Sam Montembeault. I know that's probably not going to happen. Some of you are probably wondering who the hell is Sam Montembeault. Sam Montembeault is the starting goaltender for the Montreal Canadiens. But Binnington has the edge and experience in the playoffs. He did win the Stanley Cup, albeit much, you know, not as recently as Aiden Hill. But I think he's been more consistent than Aiden Hill this season, just slightly. But talking about goal support, I think Canada is going to need to score a lot of goals because I do not trust its goaltending one bit. The United States, I think, is considered to be the favorite in this tournament because they have the best goalie bar none in this tournament, and that's Connor Hellebuck. You could also argue they have the second best goalie in this tournament as his backup, Jake Oettinger. But I do think, you know, we were talking with Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet last week on DVD. Saturday night, Montreal, U.S. and Canada. It's going to be must-see TV. The atmosphere is going to be electric. It always is in Montreal, but especially for an international tournament, Canada as the home team, the U.S. as the road team. If you are a hockey fan, I absolutely recommend that you find time on Saturday night to watch U.S. and Canada. It's going to be great. So I'm really excited for this tournament, Nick. I love seeing best-on-best hockey. What I love about this is I don't expect it to be like an all-star game where these players are just going through the motions. They are going to try their hardest, because the opportunities to represent their country have been fewer and further between in recent years. So I'm looking forward to it. I suggest all of you watch it again. The tournament starts tonight, Canada versus Sweden. The U.S. opens tomorrow against Finland at 7 o'clock Central. So be sure to watch that, and U.S. and Canada on Saturday at 7 o'clock Central as well. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we did get a much-anticipated NHL debut last week. We'll discuss that. Coming up next, Adam Vingan, Nick Kieser. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan here with Nick Kieser. Nick, we had a much-anticipated NHL debut last week. Joachim Kemmel made his league debut on the road in Chicago against the Blackhawks. It was a forgettable game overall, but I thought Kemmel made his presence felt in that game. In less than 12 minutes of ice time, he had 7 shots on goal. His 7 shots on goal were the most by a Predators player in his NHL debut. The previous record was 5 by Craig Smith in 2011. He played around 9 minutes against the Sabres, had 1 shot on goal. But there's been a lot of anticipation, Nick, about Joachim Kemmel since he was drafted in the first round a couple of years ago. what did you like about his game in his first two NHL games, mm-hmm. specifically his debut against the Blackhawks?
Yeah, I think against Chicago, and you know, I was fortunate enough to be dedicating my time to working the board here as well, so my eyes were glued on the screen as well. So I think what I enjoyed most about his play in game one as opposed to game two, he brought the energy and he brought that, you know, desire to search for the puck. And he was always looking for that next play, whether it was a hit or he was looking to, you know, kill a play. He was looking for a pass. I thought he did a really good job of finding that next gear, especially at the next level, because sometimes I often hear skaters say, well, the game's faster in the AHL depending on who you play. But then when you get to the NHL, it's more about the experience and just anticipating where to be and where shots need to be. And I think for him, it took him a little bit of time in that first game to get used to that. And I know that Andrew Burnett talked about, you know, seeing that nervousness in the first few of his shifts as well in the first period. So I thought he settled in nicely, Adam. And I think that what he did well was shoot the puck. And you know, that record that he set now, you know, I mean, that might live on for quite some time. So we'll see how he continues to acclimate. You know, I talked about earlier in the show about, you know, could he be part of the rest of the season here? I'm not too certain about that. But if he is here, it wouldn't be too shocking. So his debut was pretty nice, and I won't forget it.
Scott Wheeler of The Athletic had a story on Tuesday ranking the top 100 drafted NHL prospects. Wheeler just went through his team-by-team rankings. He had the Predators 8th in his 32-team rankings. On this 100 top 100 list, he writes, the Blackhawks and Capitals lead the way with 7 ranked prospects apiece, followed by the Sharks, Wild, and Predators with 6 each. So again, 1 through 100. The number one prospect, according to Scott Wheeler for the Predators, is Tanner Molendijk, who comes in at number 25. Out of 100. Then there is a significant drop until you see the next Predators drafted prospect, Matthew Wood at 68, David Ekstrom at 71, Zachary LaRue at 72, Fedor Svechkov at 83, and Joachim Kemmel at 88. So the Predators do not have one of those top-tier NHL drafted prospects. They don't have that next big thing, I guess you could say. And I like the depth of the Predators prospect system. I think they have a lot of quality prospects, but they are missing that one that I think is going to get fans excited. I know there's a lot of anticipation about Tanner Molendijk, and I think he could be pretty good, but I'm not sure. There's that next, this is going to be the leader of our franchise in the next generation. At least they don't have that player yet. Maybe they'll get that player at the top of this draft if they continue to fall down the standings and maybe even win the draft lottery. But when you hear that, Nick, when you hear about where these prospects rank, how the prospect pool ranks as a whole, do you agree with Scott Wheeler?
Relatively speaking, yes. I know it's tough to go organization by organization and do a really deep dive into this. And I think I could do my own ranking and you could do your own as well. But it's interesting that he looks at those drafted players for sure. And I know that, you know, one player that fans are very eager to see as well is Igor Sarin, Teddy Stiga, obviously Ryan Ufko's and one other guy that comes to mind. And I know Zachary LaRue, who's already here, was that last year. So I don't know. I think it's interesting that he has a few of those guys ranked where they are, especially Matthew Wood. I think he could be a more enticing prospect to make his debut maybe next year if he makes a jump. I doubt that happens. I think he would go back to college for his third season, I believe. And, you know, Stiga is also a freshman this year, so he's not going to be making that jump anytime soon either. Tanner Molendijk definitely is the most anticipated prospect currently. And, you know, it's an early shot, but I think he's in the NHL next year. If not, then he's probably playing. Well, not probably. He will have to play in the AHL next year. And Barry Trotz is going to let him cook. I'm not worried about that. And I think we could see him make his NHL debut, but his pro debut with the Admirals probably in April at some point in time if his postseason run does wrap up. And I am doing a prospect roundup. Talked to Tanner yesterday, actually, so stay tuned for that over at thegamenashville.com. Just kind of, you know, caught up with a few of those guys, so stay tuned for who else I end up speaking with. But yeah, no, I think that's a good list of guys, and they have a lot to build off of there, Adam.
As I said before, looking forward to being able to watch international hockey. I don't consider myself the most patriotic person, Nick Kieser, but when the United States is in international competition, I definitely get my red, white, and blue on. I like the U.S.'s chances in this tournament. They've got the best goalie. They've got a really good team. Can't wait for Saturday. Predators fans, I know you need your hockey fix. No better than watching the four nations face off, because, look, you haven't been treated to a lot of good hockey this season. You're guaranteed to get great hockey over the next couple of weeks. So take advantage of that, because the Predators, when they return to action a week from Saturday against the Colorado Avalanche, the season really doesn't have much juice left to it. I mean, there is UC Saros.
There's two juices, there, man.
Okay. All right. I think this is where we've got to end the show. Kieser, always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for talking hockey with me this evening.
Yeah. No, absolutely glad to hang out with you. And let's see how things roll in Four Nations.
The Predators, again, are back in action a week from Saturday at Bridgestone Arena against the Colorado Avalanche. You can watch the Four Nations face-off starting tonight at 7 o'clock. Canada versus Sweden. The U.S. takes the ice Thursday against Finland and UC Saros. That'll do it for us. For Nick Kieser, I'm Adam Bingham. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.